morning and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, March 13, 2018. Fire in Bentiu destroys at least 100 shops and makeshift shelters.
The problem that caused the fire is the baker. The baker is near by the generator. When the fire is breaking out, and then on that time, the generator is full of fuel, and then the fuel is jammed up.
And U.S. President Donald Trump fires Secretary of State Rex Tillerson.
There was no solid indication that this was coming. But looking back, there were some possible signals. Just after he arrived in Africa, Tillerson appeared to be blindsided by President Trump's announcement that he was ready to hold these direct talks with North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Fire has damaged more than 100 shops and homes of internally displaced persons at Bentiu's UN Protection of Civilian site. CAM residents are working together to help those who lost property and find shelter. But as INBO reports, most of the IDPs say they have very little resources to help their neighbors.
Camp residents say the fire began around 6 o'clock this morning in Sector 2, Block 10. While no one was reported to be hurt, witnesses say at least 120 shops were burned, but there was no official count.
The problem that caused the fire is the baker. The baker is near by the generator. And then so when the fire is breaking out, and then you burn the generator. So on that time, the generator is full of fuel, and then the fuel is jammed up while the shop that is nearby the generator is not the building one. It's the local material that we build for the market here in POC.
Two other IDPs said they also don't suspect foul play. They say the fire was an accident most likely set off by a baker who was making bread near the generator. James Wagatlock, another witness and camp resident, said the fire damaged a lot of clothes and some vegetables for sale in the markets, but most of the destroyed items were clothes.
Including the shop that we are having a use of clothes, because many of traders here, they sell clothes and chunker, including flour, and also we have computers. We have a center of computer here in the market, including also money. A lot of money we are burning in the market because some of traders, they were living in the block. They were not living in the market. And then when they come to help their property, so they got the shop, we are already burned.
While no one was apparently hurt, Parr says the fire was a scary moment for many young camp residents.
Just in the morning, there is a two boy that were in the shop. So their younger brother closed the shop while the small two boys were inside. So when the children were crying, so one of their customer heard the voice of that small boy, and then she broke out the shop, and then the small two boy come out, and then they were very sad, no problem.
In the aftermath of the fire, which consumed dozens of shelters of IDPs, Parr says IDPs will be struggling even more just to get by.
We need you, all NGOs and agencies that we are living here with half year in POC to contribute and then to help the people that we are burning their shop here in Sector 2, Block 10.
And Parr says they are working with church leaders to help those who lost their homes and property during the fire. Ayan Dengbior, VOA News, Washington.
U.S. President Donald Trump has fired his Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, and is replacing him with CIA Director Mike Pompeo. Trump tweeted out today, quote, "Thank you to Rex Tillerson for his service. Dina Haspel will become the new director of CIA and the first woman so chosen. Congratulations to all," end quote. Under Secretary of State Steve Goldenstein says Tillerson plans to stay at the State Department and suggested Tillerson was surprised by his ouster and did not find out about it until today. VOA correspondent Daniel Schaff in Nairobi covered Secretary of State Rex Tillerson's visit to Africa, which ended late Monday. Schaff reports no one in Africa expected Tillerson's dismissal. He tells VOA Kate Pound Dawson that Tillerson's departure is not likely to immediately affect U.S. relations with the continent.
Well, in terms of Tillerson's possible firing, there was no solid indication that this was coming. But looking back, there were some possible signals. Just after he arrived in Africa, Tillerson appeared to be blindsided by President Trump's announcement that he was ready to hold these direct talks with North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un. Tillerson was then at some pains to explain that he always supported talks with North Korea, but that they weren't ready for negotiations, and distinguishing between talks and negotiations, that difference was something that Trump did not seem to be recognizing, judging from his public comments. Tillerson also had a sudden illness on Friday, just after Trump's announcement of direct talks with North Korea, and canceled all of his scheduled Saturday events here in Nairobi. Now, we don't know if that had anything to do with the announcement or if it was just illness, but the timing is certainly going to raise some eyebrows now that Tillerson has been fired.
Now, does his dismissal undercut anything that Mr. Tillerson did while he was in Africa? Any agreements that were reached? Any developments within the relationships among the different countries?
Well, as far as the trip itself, analysts that we spoke to here in Nairobi referred to Tillerson's first trip to Africa as more of a listening tour than any sort of leap in relations. He did announce $500 million in food security aid as he was coming to Africa, but for the most part, there were no major deals or important policy shifts. It was mainly FaceTime and giving assurances of U.S. support for security, fighting terrorism, and rhetoric on increasing engagement. Of course, FaceTime with high-level officials is very helpful in advancing relationships between countries. So now the new U.S. Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, will start that FaceTime all over again when he takes his first trip to Africa as the new top U.S. diplomat. So in that way, it does undercut the personal relationships that Tillerson may have started. Of course, Tillerson's visit was also about repairing some of the damage from Trump's reported comment in January, calling some African nations a derogatory term. Analysts that we've talked to say that Tillerson's visit did go some way to try and repair some of that damage.
As you noted, this was Mr. Tillerson's first trip to Africa. He is the most senior Trump administration official to visit Africa since Mr. Trump took office. Does his firing just hours after he got back from Africa raise concerns for the future relationship between the U.S. and African nations?
Well, from what analysts tell us here in Nairobi, there's little illusion among African leaders that the continent, it's not among the top U.S. policy priorities under the Trump administration, and that's regardless of whoever is the U.S. Secretary of State. There are a number of empty diplomatic missions in Africa. Trump has yet to fill the spot of Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs. So the U.S. focus on Africa and this trip, it's very much about security, it's fighting terrorism rather than any sort of new policy shift, new deals, or substantially stepped-up engagement. So Tillerson's trip to Africa didn't really change any of those priorities, and it's doubtful that a new Secretary of State will change them unless there's a real push from the White House, from Trump himself, to make that happen.
That's VOA's Daniel Schaff in Nairobi speaking with my colleague Kate Pound Dawson in Washington. Some residents of Yei County say men in military uniform remove window, doors, frames, and iron sheets from people's houses and sell the items as scrap metal. Some Yei County residents who fled to refugee camps in Uganda and have returned back to Yei town told South Sudan in Focus reporter Daniel Martin Friday in Yei that they are returning home to find their homes without roofs and windows.
Residents say many houses in suburbs of Sopiri, Nyonkwe, Lutaya, Haidem, and Sanjesiri have been stripped of metal. Robert Amin, who lived about 2 miles south of Yei town, fled his home during fighting in 2016 and sought refuge in Uganda. He says he returned home recently to find that most permanent buildings in the area have been destroyed.
I find even my houses are vandalized already. The iron is removed, the windows removed, the doors are all removed, and they are taken, they are sold out as scraps. So I'm appealing for the government. Actually, their mandate is to protect people and their properties. And we can see now the properties are being vandalized. You go to areas starting from Sopiri, Haidem, you go to Lutaya, you go to those end of Sanjia City. All houses have been vandalized. And I don't know what government is going to do. People who are doing this are people in uniform.
Another Ye resident who prefers to be identified only as Moses for fear of reprisal from the government says he too found his house in a bad shape. Speaking in Arabic, Moses calls on the state authorities to apprehend the suspects in the area.
There is much destruction of houses in places like Nyongwe and other areas where people are returning home. Such actions should not continue.
Malice John is a resident of Morobo County. He says houses in his village have been completely destroyed by armed men.
Houses are broken up. Everything is already now off. Completely we are demolished and nothing which can help us for tomorrow. We have schools, we have homes that have been, everything has been removed. Morobo is completely empty.
Residents of Ye River State say looting and destruction of civilian property by men in military uniform forced civilians to seek refuge in neighboring Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo in 2016. Article 4 of the Cessation of Hostilities Agreement states that the parties shall not occupy or damage any public or community property or infrastructure, including schools, hospitals, business centers, places of worship, and other vital installations. SPLA military spokesman Brigadier General Lul Rai Kong denies SPLA forces destroyed any civilian property.
The removal of iron sheet, it has never been brought to our attention. What I know is that the rebels are moving very close and they might be responsible for vandalization of abandoned homes. To the best of my knowledge, any area which is under our control, it falls under jurisdiction and under responsibility of the National Army to protect the infrastructure, the property, including the building. This is what we have been doing in all the areas that have been in our control.
SPLAIO Deputy Military Spokesman Colonel Lam Paul Gabriel denies rebels responsible for vandalizing homes. He claims that all rebel-controlled areas are intact.
When you come to our territory right now, our control area, you will find that all these buildings, they are still intact. Whether it is a toilet, whether it is a shelter, a small one, whether it's a kitchen, but even if it is for the animals, they are all intact. We never attack the roof. These people who do this destruction, they remove them, then they send them to the border in Kaya to be sold. Kaya is under the control of the government. Kaya, they're in control of Morobo, they are in control of Ye.
Last week, Ye River State Governor Emmanuel Adil issued an order banning the selling or buying scrap metal.
I made a gubernatorial order stopping the business or removal of scraps because I've noted that this has become a security threat where even it's not only scrap that has been collected, but even people are removing iron sheets. And I directed all county commissioners, national security and police to escape that with immediate effect in the whole state.
A scrap metal dealer who prefers to be identified only as Andaria for fear of identity criticized the state's decision to ban the sale of all scrap metal. Speaking in Arabic, Andaria claims he is only involved with buying old metal from sellers in town.
We don't understand why they have banned trade in scrap metals. We were not informed and we did not sit down for a meeting to know what kind of scrap metals we are allowed to deal in.
Andaria claims he and other metal dealers collect only old metals and sell for a living. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friar Martin in EA.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at cholera outbreak in Malawi. That story is coming up right after this break.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what are the main things that matter to you in life?
My family and my dress. I love whenever I look good and people talk about it, that, oh, your dress is good, everything about you is good. That is what I love.
Doing my things in the right time, my future, my education, my family.
One of the things, as I've told you, I'm a born-again Christian. When I received the gift of salvation, I felt good, and so it was not something easy.
Life, me, it's all about faithfulness and honesty. Yes, I know with that, everything is possible. When you're faithful to your partner or your co-worker, those things will definitely push you far.
I think education matters so much. I put it as first, and also God, because if I don't have God in my life, I don't think anything can rhyme.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America, and it's time for our Tuesday Health segment. Today, we are talking about a cholera outbreak in Malawi. Malawi continues to register new cases of cholera in an outbreak that has now reached half of the country's 28 districts. However, the government and community leaders trade blames over containment efforts. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
According to the latest figures from the Minister of Health, 23 people have died from cholera since the first case was recorded in November. The number of infected people has now ballooned to 739 from 157 in January. Joshua Malango is the spokesperson for the ministry. He told VOA that a major cause for the rising number of cases is because of people's beliefs in superstitions.
Some are still believing that having cholera is not to do with hygiene, it's to do with witchcraft or some traditional beliefs. So instead of rushing to the hospital, they resort to seek some traditional medicine which cannot help.
Malango says, for example, one patient died last Thursday in the capital, Lilongwe, because he refused to go to the hospital for medical help. Malango also says churches that prohibit their sick members from getting medical help have contributed to the death toll. He says the authorities recently rescued and took to the hospital some cholera patients who were being prayed for at a church in Salima District, central Malawi.
There are members of the Zion Church who started to go to a church for prayers and the like. A few of them died, and using police force, we managed to rescue seven people who were at the church.
Cholera causes severe diarrhea and can kill within hours if not treated. It spreads via contaminated food and water. Levi Zakeo Mazalunga is the head of the Zion Church in Blantyre, which does not allow its members to get medical help when sick. He told VOA it is wrong to say that his church members died of cholera because they did not go to the hospital. He says, we believe that whether one goes to the hospital or not, they will die. It is what God told Adam when he created the earth, that everyone will die regardless of age or circumstances. He read out several verses in the Bible where the sick people were healed because of prayers. But health campaigners have a different view. Maziko Matemba is the executive director for the Health and Rights Education Program. He says the rising cholera cases confirm the government's failure to sensitize communities on measures to prevent and contain the disease.
How far has the Minister of Health maybe identified the gap which is there right now? Because if the condition is still coming out, it shows that I think there's somewhere where I think the government could have maybe done in terms of sending messages to hygiene.
Joshua Malango defends the government's efforts to contain the cholera outbreak.
If you look at the figures which we are getting on a daily basis and comparing it with the previous months or weeks, it looks like we are making some strides, because as of yesterday we had only Salima, Lilongwe had no other new cholera cases.
He also says the government has just immunized about 100,000 people during the first round of cholera vaccinations that took place in the northern districts of Karunga and Rumpi. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
From Malawi, we return to Juba, where President Salva Kiir has fired his finance minister, Stephen Dau Diu, in a presidential order which was read on state television last night. Mr. Kiir appointed Salvatore Garang as the new Minister of Finance, as we hear from Wake Simon Wudu from Juba.
Analysts say President Kiir's decision to fire Diu Dau says Mr. Kiir is trying to address the South Sudan's economic crisis. Economic experts say Mr. Kiir has been recycling the same politicians in the same positions for years, something that is unlikely to produce promising results. Kimo Adiebo, an assistant professor for economics at the University of Juba, says firing Diu is probably not the best option to address the country's deep economic problems.
If you want to control the economy, you have to address the spillovers of the war, right? The insecurity resulting into lack of confidence on the part of the private sector, even development partners. If you look at the supply of hard currency, it has gone down simply because many of these institutions have decided to keep their money outside South Sudan or even outside the banking system. The increasing spending on war itself, most of the budget has been going for the security sector over 50%. So even if you change and these other parameters have not been addressed, it's very difficult to achieve or control the economy overnight.
Agustino Ting Mayai, a policy analyst at the Juba-based Sut Institute, agrees that sacking Diu is not the answer.
We have a number of policy actions that are required to be undertaken right away before you can administer changes in the economy or in the system overall. And those policy actions would begin with the need for peace in the country. And so the current negotiations in Addis Ababa, in my opinion, override other initiatives that the government might want to undertake.
Garang is the third finance minister Mr. Kiir has appointed since the conflict broke out in late 2013 and the fifth since South Sudan separated from Sudan in 2011. Analysts say Diu tried to repair the economy by putting in place measures that included regulations to prevent corrupt officials from looting the treasury. Diu also suspended one of his undersecretaries for alleged corruption earlier this year. Mayai says there are key areas Garang will need to focus on if he is going to successfully revive the economy, especially the country's oil revenues.
The revenue that the country needs to operate to meet its functions, it's not there. You have civil servants not being paid for months, and that is problematic. You have corruption that plagues the economy, and the Ministry of Petroleum is littered with that. If you look at remittances from oil revenue, you'll find some issues there.
Adiebo and Mayai say the new Minister of Finance will have to address the issue of the depreciating South Sudanese pound, deal with the managing government debt, paying civil servants, and strengthening the country's economic policies. They say the incoming finance minister must also restore working relations with the central bank. The new finance minister served as a technical advisor in the Ministry of Trade and Industry. Mr. Kiir also fired Lieutenant General Marial Chanuang Yol, who was the Assistant Chief of Defense Forces in the Army. Chanuang was the commander of the Presidential Guard who led the operations in Juba following the fighting that began December 15, 2013. In 2014, the U.S. Department of the Treasury sanctioned Chanuang for being responsible for or complicit in policies that threatened the peace security of South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
A group of lawyers from the disputed Abyei region say they are engaging the international community to push Sudan and South Sudan into resolving their dispute over the final status of Abyei. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Juba.
The lawyers, who are members of the group known as the Abyei Lawyers Network for Final Status, say since Juba and Khartoum have failed to resolve the dispute over Abyei, the group will use legal means to mobilize support for the final status of the area. Moinlua Kalor Kuol is the chairman of the Lawyers Network. He outlines how his group plans to move forward.
To interact with the people, the grassroots, the stakeholders, so that they know the stake the problem has reached, so that they are not kept in the dark. And also, this body would also want to interact with the key players or actors that are concerned with the issue of BA. These actors could be at the level of the nation here, at the level of the region, or even internationally.
The Abyei Protocol, which is part of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement, ended the civil war between the Sudan People's Liberation Army and the Sudan government in 2005. The protocol defines Abyei as an area of the nine Ngokdinga chiefdoms transferred to Kordofan in 1905. Moinluak says the network believes Abyei belongs to South Sudan, but he says resolving the final status of Abyei requires political will by both countries.
We have got so many agreements and decisions that are made in favor of our people in order to solve the problem, but they have not been implemented. We have to think deeply why they were not implemented. And we have also to be creative in motivating those people and let them have the necessary environment that will help them to implement the decision that have been agreed.
Abyei resident Francis Deng, South Sudan's former ambassador to the United Nations and former Secretary General's special advisor for the prevention of genocide, says the Abyei dispute has been politicized over the years and it would be appropriate for the both Juba and Khartoum to resolve its final status.
The data has used legal, economic, social, cultural, whatever values we think can promote our goal and not undermine one another. Let us be convinced that we are all working for the same thing.
25-year-old Abyei resident Abiel Weng Abdulmajid says she worries about what happens to future generation of the Ngokdinka people in Abyei.
No solution will come if you are staying at home relaxing. You have to move and do what necessary to be to get what you wanted, because if you want the justice, you have to go and look for it. As a Abyei citizen, We need a peace in Abyei, and we have to go to the media, talk about our issue.
28-year-old Abyei resident Byung Majak Byung says South Sudan's ongoing conflict has diverted attention from the Abyei issue. He says the area's final status should be resolved once and for all so Abyei can be developed.
People of Abyei in diaspora and those who are in here in Juba or other countries, they try to make some fund to the area. It may help people who are there, vulnerable people, those who are not able to get good education or good medicine.
The Dinka Ngok voted in a unilateral referendum conducted in October 2013 to become part of South Sudan. Neither Khartoum nor Juba recognized the results of the referendum. The United Nations Interim Forces for Abyei, UNISFA, keeps law and order in the disputed region. The Security Council extended the mandate of UNISFA to May 2018. The Security Council is also limiting support for the disputed territory's border monitoring mechanism as the UN awaits for implementation of measures agreed by Sudan and South Sudan on future of Abyei. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
That report by Michael Atit brings us to the end of our show for this Tuesday. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Would like to know what you think about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also look us up on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Homeless.